happy day.
Oh, happy day.
When Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
Oh, when he wore.
Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
He washed my sins away.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. I'm on the road, not in studio, so you can't watch today's show. We're going to talk about improving your memory. A lot of people could benefit from that, and how having a healthier heart, preventing cancer, all on today's show. My guest and newsmaker guest in the second part of our program, Jose Luis Grandos Sage, is an investigative journalist, and he is based in Mexico City. And we're going to talk about the Honduran crisis and Honduran refugee immigration moving north. What is the story the mainstream media is not telling us? I believe that this will be an important insight. Also, today we're going to take a look at our audio file, and we're going to examine the war in Yemen. We've done about 40 mentions, including two full programs, on this, but none of the mainstream media has touched it. Only now, just now, are they discovering this war that's been going on for 3 years? Well, there have been a minimum of 16,000 civilians killed, but another report says 50,000 children have been killed. And the U.S. backs this. We're responsible. We're going to talk about that. Also, our media matters and George Soros behind the social purge. Everywhere you look, good people, outstanding investigative journalists, social activists, are being thrown off social media with no explanation, no opportunity to appeal. So why? Why are they doing it? Who's behind it? We'll explore that in an audio clip. That's our show. We have a lot to share. Time permitting, I'll open it up for calls. But we always like to begin with the latest on health and healing. This is from Columbia University. And American researchers revealed how a bone hormone reversed memory loss in the aging brain in this scientific experiment, and that leads new insights into how exercise can positively affect the brain. The study was published in the journal Cell Reports, and it showed that a naturally occurring hormone called osteo, that's O-S-T-E-O, calcin, C-A-L-C-I-N, osteocalcin, worked with a protein to keep your memory intact. And so there's going to be a lot more research on this, but we've always known that people who exercise regularly have a longer lifespan, are healthier, but this gives us one more reason why. Because your bones are actually releasing hormones. A lot of your cells, your immune system cells, are made in your bone marrow. So now we found something else, and that helps your memory. One more reason to do our daily exercise. From the University of Edinburgh comes a report about garlic and bitter cola, that's K-O-L-A. They're both effective in treating respiratory infections, which are so common. I was flying out late last night, about midnight, and I'm back on location, and almost everyone on the plane was coughing. Now, I load my body up with the nutrients to protect my immune system when I'm on a flight. This is about a three-hour flight. And I spray colloidal silver in my nose and in my throat and around my mouth. And I also gargle with a diluted solution of wild oregano oil. And I also take a tincture that has, actually it's more than a tincture, it's about a teaspoon of Manuka honey with ginger and lemon juice. I gargle with it and then swallow it down and then take lots of vitamin C. The whole thing takes me maybe, 3 minutes, 2 minutes. And for every 2 hours, I'll just give my mouth another spray, but also I wear a little negative ionizer around my throat. No one notices. It's a little small, but it's throwing off an electromagnetic charge that neutralizes bacteria from getting into my throat. So when you hear people on a plane, they're coughing and hacking, that's a petri dish, and it's a sealed environment. So that means that a person in the back of the plane, coughing a couple times, they're going to have their bacteria and viruses spread throughout the entire plane. And that's why a lot of people who travel regularly end up with compromised immune system. They get colds and the flu. So garlic and bitter cola can make a difference. It's a combination of the two. Garcinia cola, that's G-A-R-C-I-N-I-A, and garlic, which is alum, A-L-L-I-U-M, sativum, S-A-T-I-V-U-M. And it has very, very powerful antimicrobial properties. And this was the research, and it was published in the Journal of Environmental Sciences, Toxicology, and Food Chemistry. So, if you know someone who's in a hospital, you don't want them ending up getting Staphylococcus aureus or Echinacea, the E. coli, and this kills them. And that's good. It has very strong properties, and that's why I believe that we should have an entirely different approach using ozone therapy on people who are bedridden and trigger point therapy and have automatic rollers with little tiny spines on them, rolling up and down a person's legs and back to stimulate circulation so they don't end up with gangrene. Because you can end up with ulcers and lose a leg. Thousands, tens of thousands of people a year in hospitals end up with ulcers, frequently becoming infected, and then they use antibiotics. The antibiotics are not effective. They don't understand, other things you could do that could help, and they're not interested. So you should know that for yourself. From MIT, which is the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, comes a study about how your brain overcomes limitations using prior beliefs. So just imagine trying to write your name so that it can be read in a mirror. Your brain has all the visual information you need, and you're a pro at writing your own name. Still, this task is very difficult for most people. That's because it requires the brain to perform a mental transformation that it's not familiar with, meaning using what it sees in the mirror to accurately guide your hand to write backwards. So MIT neuroscientists have now discovered how the brain tries to compensate for its poor performance in tasks that require this kind of complicated transformation, as it also does in other types of situations where it has little confidence in its own judgment. The brain attempts to overcome its difficulties by relying on previous experiences. Here's what they say, quote, "If you're doing something that requires a harder mental transformation and therefore creates more uncertainty and more variability, you rely upon your prior beliefs and biases toward what you know how to do well in order to compensate for that variability. This strategy actually improves overall performance," the researchers report in Nature Communications. But there's a downside to this also. And here's the downside. Let's say that you're faced with a task, remembering something. Now, you think that you've remembered it correctly, but this is where going back in time and resurrecting a memory, it's never going to be the way it was, because we have all of our biases, and how we adapted, which is more often than not maladaptation to that moment, and or how we transcend that moment. That's rare. But it does happen where someone's met with adversity and we become stronger because of that adversity. We learn lessons. More often than not, however, people recast that experience. And our biases tell us, what would I like the outcome to be? And then we start projecting that outcome as if it's real. And that's why memory is so frequently faulty. From Aarhus University in Denmark, painkillers during pregnancy are linked to early puberty in girls. So just remember, the painkiller during pregnancy can cause your daughters to hit their puberty early. That's not healthy. You don't want that. And from Jinling University, a flavonoid found in citrus fruits. There's your oranges, your grapefruit, even pineapple, and lemons and limes. Helps keep your heart strong in cancer patients. And it's called rutin, R-U-T-I-N. It's a natural pigment found in fruits and vegetables. And a study published in the Journal of Asian Natural Product Research found that this flavonoid can protect the heart from damage caused by chemotherapy, making it a potentially effective means to counter the side effects that cancer patients experience from chemo treatment. And the researchers created a model to test both the acute and chronic cardiac toxicity, and they found that this made a big difference. So, you can buy rutin tablets, they're inexpensive, or you can simply eat more citrus fruits, and that would be good. You've heard me mention so many times that there is no amount of alcohol that's good for you. All alcohol will destroy brain cells, heart cells, kidney cells, liver cells. It weakens the heart, making it more susceptible to cardiomyopathy. It makes it more susceptible to strokes. It constricts. It's a vasoconstrictor, circulation to the brain. And it does a big kill-off. And yet, people in our society have made a ritual of having, like, wines or liqueurs for dinner or socializing. Now, the average person that consumes alcohol doesn't do it to get drunk. It's just more of, okay, this is what I have been conditioned to believe is a part of my dining experience. But it's not good. This is from Brown University today, and it was published in the peer-reviewed journal Neuron, which is a highly respected journal. And it found that, quote, just a few drinks can change how memories are formed. Wow. One of the many challenges of having alcohol and other substances that we abuse is that we risk a relapse or even an addictive quality. We feel deprived if we don't have it. Even after progress towards recovery, even pesky fruit flies have a hankering for alcohol, and because the molecular signals involved in forming flies' reward and avoidance memories, they're much the same as those in humans. And that's why they're used as a model for human studies. Well, here's the takeaway message. When you drink, you end up causing memories, and these memories are not going to be accurate, and that's dangerous. So stay away from alcohol and protect your brain. And by protecting your brain, you're also protecting yourself against dementia. From Rutgers University, published in the journal Aging Research and Clinical Practice, comes a study that tooth loss can indicate malnutrition. Now, this is especially important as you get older because we're not taking in enough boron, calcium, magnesium, vitamin K2 and 3, vitamin D, all of which are important for proper mineralization. And so, holistic dentists can understand this, and that's why it's so important to seek out a holistic dentist. Because a regular dentist, they say, well, you know, you're losing a tooth, so we'll put in a replacement for that, an implant or some other form. Not a good idea. You can go back to having good mineral supplementation. And that's why you must seek someone to do your dental work who understands mineralization and get good minerals in the body. You'll have a stronger jaw, stronger teeth, and less likely to have cavities and infections. It's not difficult. And finally, they're finding that when you take supplements on a regular basis, and you have to go a period of time without them, and you're stressed, even after you stop taking them, those supplements are still working on your behalf for the next month in your body. Now, that would be probiotics and magnesium and different minerals. They all help the body reduce stress and fatigue, even after users stop taking them. This was an interesting study and of what happens when you're taking supplements on a regular basis, which I highly recommend. But if you have to stop, okay, the body will continue carrying on for about a month. And early supplementation can help offset early life stress on the adult brain. This is from the University of Amsterdam, published in the scientific journal FASEB. So early life has been shown to impair learning and memory in later life, but new research published in the journal suggests that improved nutrition early in life can help offset the negative effects of stress, specifically using the micronutrients, vitamin B6, vitamin B12, folic acid. Now, your body doesn't manufacture those, like methionine. So you have to take it in supplemental form. People think, oh, I can take it in my diet. Very difficult to get the nutrients you need as you grow and as your body is stressed physically and emotionally and biologically. You just can't get it through a diet. And that's why a good diet's important, but also proper supplementation is also important. So get your supplements starting early in life, and you have a big chance of having a less stressed brain later in life. I'm Gary Noll. We're 17 minutes into our program. That's our health and nutrition segment. We're going to take a brief break and come right back. A lot more to share. Nice to have you with us, everyone. As you probably know if you've been listening for any period of time, throughout my entire career, I've always talked about health and healing and nutrition, environmental issues, also self-empowerment, how we can become the best we can be as a human being, athleticism, but also I have always directed my energy towards social issues, especially those that the media was not covering or not covering honestly. And that's what we do now. I'm going to share an audio clip in a moment about what's going on in Yemen. I posted some photographs today about Yemen. How in the world can we say that we care about women and children? And I know we do, but not care about the women and children who are dying by the thousands. There's 29 million people who literally could be wiped out based on Saudi Arabia, the homicidal maniac that runs that country, as well as the United Arab Emirates and Great Britain and France and the United States. We're the ones supplying the weapons, the intelligence, the cluster bombs, which are illegal, we have a moral responsibility. And yet, it was Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama who supported the Crown Prince in starting this effort and didn't stop him. We had the power to stop. We chose not to. We had the power to stop over 500 beheadings. We didn't stop a single one, including allowing the PR firms, and there are a lot of them, that the absolute monarch, he's not the king. His father's the king and still alive, but he's the crown prince, in which case he controls everything. So on the one hand, they set up a reformist tour in the United States. He appeared on 16 Minutes. They were fawning all over him and all these other shows and saying what a great reformer he was. He's a homicidal maniac. He's a killer. And all those women who tried to get the crown prince to allow a woman to drive, all of them have been arrested. They're still in custody. One woman protester was beheaded about a month or so ago. Yeah, they're beheading an average of about 150 people per year. And yet it was under John Kerry and Barack Obama that Saudi Arabia was recommended to be on the Human Rights Council at the UN, actually to head it. That's one of the most insane things imaginable. But that's why I have no respect for either political party or any of the politicians in Washington, because they're all abiding to those who give them money. So in any case, we're going to play this clip. And just remember, we're responsible as a country. Our tax dollars goes in to this genocide. And make no mistake, when you put 29 million lives at risk, 99% are women and children and older men and civilians, that's a major genocide. You're right up there with, you're exceeding Pol Pot. You're up there with Mao and Stalin and Hitler. Yeah, that's serious. And we're not doing a damn thing about it. We're denying it. So I think it's important we focus again on this. And then after that, I'd like for you to call in and share your points of view of why do you believe that as a society, we're not doing a single thing to limit it, prevent it, or to stop it in any way, shape, or form. We continue by our enabling to allow governments all over the world to be interfered with if they don't align with us. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. And so we'll go there first, play this clip, and then come back.
Yesterday, I spoke about how MSNBC on any of the shows on their network hasn't mentioned the U.S. role in the war in Yemen in over a year. FAIR.org tracked it, and that's what they found, which is insane. But MSNBC found ways to do literally hundreds of segments on Stormy Daniels. In the immortal words of Ron Weasley, they need to sort out their priorities. Because if cable news wants to prove that they aren't state media, basically, they need to start covering stories like this. The ground where the wedding tent once stood was covered with children's slippers, broken musical instruments, pieces of festive clothing, and other detritus of destroyed lives. Teeth still attached to the jawbone lay near some tattered decorations. There is even some flesh left, said Elan Yahya, the bride's father, pointing at blackened shards hanging from a tree branch. An airstrike hit the wedding in the remote mountain village on April 23rd, killing 22 civilians, including 8 children, and injuring dozens, according to interviews with 17 villagers in late May. More than 3 years into Yemen's civil war, over 16,000 civilians have been killed and injured, the vast majority by airstrikes, the UN Human Rights Office estimates, adding that the figures are likely to be far higher. The deaths are continuing unabated, with as many as hundreds of casualties per month, despite assurances by a U.S.-backed regional coalition to better protect civilians amid mounting criticism within the United States and the international community. Children's slippers in broken ash with flesh hanging from trees, That is what the United States is doing right now. But Stormy Daniels, Russia, all goddamn day, every day. This needs attention. These stories. It's stomach churning. 16,000 civilians, conservatively estimated, have been killed in 3 years with the United States' backing. And for what? This is a proxy war between Saudi Arabia and Iran. It's a game to them about geopolitical influence. And we picked a side in this bloody, senseless conflict and rivalry based on our own arbitrary alliances with the oppressive Saudi regime. Just because it isn't U.S. troops directly murdering these children and innocent people doesn't mean we don't have massive amounts of blood on our hands. Without us, the coalition of the UAE and Saudi Arabia wouldn't be able to commit these atrocities. That coalition, led by Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, is backing Yemen's exiled government in its conflict against the rebels known as the Houthis, who dominate the capital and the north. The United States is playing an essential role in the war, supporting the coalition with intelligence, refueling, technical assistance, and billions of dollars in bombs and other weaponry. The coalition is the only actor in the conflict that uses warplanes, mostly American and British-made fighter jets. The airstrikes have struck hospitals, schools, markets, motels, migrant boats, gas stations, even funeral gatherings, raising questions about the coalition's ability to abide by humanitarian laws, you think, that calls for civilians to be safeguarded. They are using our jets, our machinery. And this isn't by accident, this is purposeful. In fact, Donald Trump and the United States Senate, our government, actually ramped up the sale of arms to Saudi Arabia so they could continue doing more of this. The growing civilian casualties across Yemen have led to widespread denouncement of the U.S. role and calls in Congress to halt or regulate American weapon sales to Saudi Arabia, a close U.S. ally in the Middle East. Despite the concern, President Trump announced $110 billion in new arms sales last year to the kingdom, weapons that most analysts expect will be used in Yemen. After the Senate narrowly approved a $510 million first installment of precision-guided munitions to Saudi Arabia last June, the kingdom said it would launch a training program to reduce accidental targeting of civilians. But in the year since that announcement, civilian deaths were 7% more than the year prior, the UN data shows. In April alone, there were 236 civilians killed and 238 injured, the deadliest month this year so far. So the U.S. government was like, oh, Saudi Arabia promised it would stop killing civilians? Great! Problem solved! We can go home! Oh, but only after we give more and more arms to the Saudis. Trump proudly announced $110 billion in arms sales to them, and the Senate gave them an additional package of money, precision-guided munitions. Newsflash, if they're not trying to target civilians, they're not very precise. But they actually aren't avoiding civilians. They're literally targeting schools, hospitals. But the U.S. government, it doesn't care. The Saudis give us oil? Okay, blank check to them to use our planes and our ammo and our hardware to kill tens of thousands of civilians. Are the civilians blonde and blue-eyed? Oh, they're not. Okay, well then. Raytheon spokesman Michael Doble said the company does not comment on the military actions of our allies or customers. Its sales of munitions to Saudi Arabia, he said, were reviewed and approved by Congress, the Pentagon, and the State Department, and so reflect the foreign policy and national security interests of the United States government and are in compliance with U.S. law. It definitely reflects our interests, maybe not international law, but yeah, Raytheon doesn't condemn it. I wonder why. Shares of Raytheon jumped to an all-time high of $170.74 in midday trading on July 27, 2017, after the company said it was getting a boost from President Donald Trump. The military specialist hit a previous all-time high on May 22, 2017, when Trump signed a weapons deal with Saudi Arabia worth $350 billion. And that's how things work in Washington. Flesh hanging from trees, children's shoes scattered on the ground, tens of thousands dead. But Raytheon, they got to make an extra buck. So I guess It's all worth it.
All right. If you would have comments you'd like to share on this, now's an opportunity. 888-874-4888. We're going to take a brief break and come right back. Please stay with us. Well, right now we don't have any calls, but if we do get some calls, I'd be happy to take them. We're going to go to our guests in about 5 minutes. I just want to share a few more things here from our environmental topic today. We have another round of tests finds the weed killer widespread in popular cereals and snack bars. This is from Environmental Health News yesterday. Glyphosate is in a bunch of popular cereals and oatmeals. And the federal government says, well, it's okay. It's not okay. Experts say it's difficult to estimate the risk from the level found, but the report is still worrisome since children are consistently exposed. And I know this audience knows that glyphosate, which is the active ingredient in Monsanto's Roundup weed killer, was found in every single batch, 28 separate samplings of different cereals and snacks. And this was done at the Environmental Working Group laboratories. So it's like DDT. It's the modern version of DDT. And my hope is that there'll be tens of thousands of lawsuits against the Bayer and Monsanto merged company to put this product out of business. That's where it belongs, and out of our bodies and out of the environment. That's important. And for those of you who are concerned about the purging that's going on, well, by the way, just as an aside, yesterday we were not able at Progressive Radio Network or my own personal website to access our Facebook account. Why? We weren't told. Today we have it back. I don't know if this was a fluke, what the cause was, but from now on what we're doing is every day we are posting everything that I would normally post, videos, articles, photographs, inspirational stories, that I would normally put on my personal Facebook. We're posting them on PRN.FM. PRN.FM. That way, if for some reason you can't hear or find anything over Facebook involving me, for whatever reason they choose, and right now their purge is going on, we may be a part of that purge, but at least you can go to PRN.FM. We are also going to have by Monday a whole list of other platforms, media platforms, that we will be putting our articles and documentaries on so that you'll still have an opportunity to communicate and see what we're up to. Anyhow, this is from RT. I thought you would find this of interest. It says, just the beginning, top neocon insider claims responsibility for Facebook purge. Says more to come. Quote, an employee of a leading Washington, D.C. think tank has reportedly taken credit for the recent purge of alternative media by Facebook and Twitter, claiming it to be necessary to fight against, quote, fake news from Russia and China. In the latest act of apparent censorship of political speech online, U.S.-based tech giants this month shut down hundreds of user accounts. Some belong to well-established alternative media outlets with hundreds of thousands of followers, like the Free Thought Project and the Anti-Media. A senior fellow at the German Marshall Fund, a leading think tank advocating U.S. global supremacy, seems to have at least partially taken credit for this. So, what is happening is that behind the scenes of all the major media platforms, they're deciding which people should be there and which should not. And this is without any communication, nothing at all. And when they take you off, you're off. Chris Hedges, off. Truth Dig, Consortium News, Global Research. These are very important and highly ethical forums, and yet hundreds have been purged. So we are going to anticipate that may also happen to us. So as of today, you can always go to prn.fm. You can watch the videos that you might have missed yesterday, and you'll still be up to date on everything. Just wanted to share that with you. Also, I just want to mention that I'm going to be doing some hiring, not of older, experienced IT people, but rather young, more idealistic, social activists, activists, real activists, to come in and work our PRN and other websites to get the information out to as many people as possible. And so it'll pay, but we want younger people, idealists, not people who have been around so long that they're not motivated. They're just there for a paycheck. We've interviewed a lot of those people, and now we're going to take a different approach. So if you're young, idealistic, you care about social issues, you'll talk with Jesse, Glenn, Phil, Joe, Neil. Those are the people who are the people who kind of run the office when I'm not there. And we're going to go far and wide with our new exposés. I've done 3 just this week. And that's why I'm asking people, download them off prn.fm, one on genetically modified foods, one on the flu vaccine, and two on the environment, a whole environmental series. I have another one on the environment on Monday. So we're researching and writing, Richard Gell and myself, about 20 hours a day. But we're getting the information out, but we need to get it out to more places. Just go to prnstudio@gmail.com, prnstudio@gmail.com, and put in there your information, and you'll be contacted. I'm also still hoping that someone from this audience who has experience with animals would like to relocate and take care of animals, rescue animals from all types, from exotics to domestics, that we find homes for. In fact, in the last 3 months, I found a home after 3 years for 2 Zebu cows. They were emaciated when I got them. Now they're healthy and happy and loving. And an emu, found a wonderful home with a flock of emus. Swans, let's see what else. Two monkeys, squirrel monkeys, found them homes. That wasn't quick. That took 7 years because we're very particular about the home or environment or larger animal environment that we put them back, or if we can let them back into the wilds, that's great too. So you can also go to the same site if you're interested. I want to mention that I was asked, in fact, last night when I was on the plane, one of the people in the audience came over after I got off the plane and said, you know, I take a lot of your products, but what is the best product of them all? I said, well, there is no best product. Each one is unique, what it does in the body. Green stuff, red stuff, power berry blast, cardio stuff, sleep stuff, de-stress stuff, fiber stuff. They're all unique. Well, what if I had to take one above all else? Okay. I said the anti-aging elixir. Oh, I didn't know about that. What's that about? Well, you talk about a superstar recipe. First, it's BPA-free, it's gluten-free, it's vegan, it's kosher, it's natural challah, it's everything in one. For example, here are the ingredients. Show me any other product ever created that has all this in it. It's a liquid. It's a big liquid, 33.8 ounces. It is organic apple juice, an organic mangosteen, an organic tart cherry, an organic pomegranate, an organic SI, organic nopal, organic noni, organic turmeric, organic ginger, an organic sea buckthorn, ascorbic acid, an organic mango, organic papaya, pectin, organic guar, natural mangosteen, organic lychee, organic beetroot, organic aloe vera, goji, which is wolfberry, elderberry, cranberry, blueberry, kakadu, which is a plum, organic moringa, and organic baobab, and organic macaque, and stevia in a graviola flavor. So everything that I could come up with that I felt would really impact our body in a positive way, from our heart to our brain, I put in here. And it took about a year and a half because the person I went to manufacture had to find the best sources. It took a long time, but we finally have it. It's called Anti-Aging Elixir. This is the ultimate superfruit phytonutrient blend. It's only got 25 calories and only 4 grams of natural sugar in there. And it's got everything you could imagine. No one else would do this. It's here, and it's on sale. So if you'd like your jar of anti-aging elixir to be sent right out to you, call this number, 877-627-5065. Again, 877-627-5065. And you can call that number, and you'll speak with Diane. She's a superstar. And Bill, and Sandy, who's terrific, and Anne. And we have a great team that they all have people who call them, ask them questions. They'll be happy to answer your questions. So give a call for the anti-aging elixir. We just got a brand new batch, and I only make it in about 800 bottles. I want it fresh. And you got to shake it. You got to shake it and refrigerate it. And because I didn't put any of the emulsifiers in here and homogenizers and blend it. I didn't do any of that. I wanted this as pure, raw, powerful as possible. Anti-aging elixir. So if there's one above all, it would be this. Call 877-627-5065. Back in a moment with my guest. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome you all over the world. We're heard everywhere, plus syndicated stations here in the United States. And for 42 years, the longest-running non-commercial daily radio program in American history on our sister station, WBAI. And we like to bring you the stories behind the stories. The front is what the media decides for its own ideological beliefs should be the story we should hear, and it's frequently not the full truth. Helping us better understand the Honduran crisis and the Honduran refugee migration north, on the phone right now from Mexico City is Jose Luis Grandios Ceja. That's C-E-J-A. As I mentioned earlier in the program, he's an investigative journalist, photojournalist, and he was previously a staff writer for the Pan-Latin American Telesur media firm, headquarters in Venezuela. He's now working on contemporary political issues, especially on social and labor movements in Latin America. And he was on the ground in southern Mexico covering the Honduran caravans migrating north through Mexico and ultimately the United States. Nice to have you with us today.
Happy to be here.
You recently returned from the Mexican-Guatemalan border where caravans of migrants fleeing Central American countries, the majority from Honduras, and making their way north. And figures for their numbers vary between 4,000 and the UN's figure of over 7,000. So just briefly provide us with an update on the status of the caravan, its size, and how it's being handled by the Mexican government now that Trump is threatening Mexico to close the border and plans to send military troops, which he's already done.
Yes. Yeah, so like you said, it's a bit hard to get a grasp of the numbers, but it is a very large quantity. When I was there, I jumped on top of a pedestrian bridge, and it stretched out for, I would say, at least a mile. So it gives you an idea just of the quantity of people. And it's actually much, much larger than the last caravan, which some of your listeners might be familiar with, that came through in April. That was about 1,500, and that caused quite a commotion in the news. So this gives you an idea of just how many more people are taking part of this. And just to kind of explain a little bit about what's motivating people, at least the ones I talked to, all of them said that they had every intention of making this journey. It's just the situation in Honduras is such that it's basically unlivable. From the violence to the poverty to the state repression, they really feel like they just have no other option. And so when this caravan, kind of the news came out that people were going to leave on another caravan, a lot of people jumped on board. So I would say there's probably at least 7,000 people in Mexico now traveling through Chiapas on foot. And there's probably a few, maybe 2,000-3,000 more that are in either between Honduras and Guatemala. And what we've seen actually is that in Central America, there's actually been a repression, a controlling of the movement of people. In Central America, they have lots of agreements that allows the free movement of anybody from the Central American countries, but they're actually quite limited, shutting down official crossing points. But I do know that, say, as of this morning, a new group of at least 2,000 had left Honduras and were entering Guatemala and making it into the country to try to make it to Mexico. And in terms of the threats, at least from the people that I was talking to, it doesn't seem to really impact them much. And I think that's actually just a symptom of the desperation that people feel. They're very well aware that this is a major news item in the United States, that there are a lot of people with a lot of racist sentiment towards this caravan, but they're not discouraged because they feel like they have no choice. They have to continue on. One thing that really impacted me is one woman said, well, if Mexico gives us work visas, then we can stay here too. The point is to try to find employment to be able to provide for our families back home. And I asked her, that's curious because the incoming government, which takes office here in Mexico on December 1st, precisely the president-elect said that he would offer work visas. And I said, why didn't you wait until December? And without a moment's hesitation, she said, because my children will die of hunger.
Thank you. I appreciate that insight. I reported several years ago about the coup that occurred under Hillary Clinton's State Department and Barack Obama's support that overthrew the Honduras democratically elected President Manuel Zelaya. And the nation has collapsed into complete chaos since then, and the Obama administration has turned Honduras into another Libya. And there's rampant inequality and growing poverty, no employment, and violence through drugs and gangs, and street crime is everywhere. And Honduras also now has the highest homicide rate in the world. And the capital, San Pedro Sula, is the world's murder capital. And the Hondurans fleeing for safety to the north in Mexico and the United States are not doing so, in my opinion, because of life is supposed to be better in the United States. These are refugees from a regime change the United States orchestrated. So would you please speak about the reasons the U.S. wanted to oust Zelaya? And what are the Honduran migrants fleeing telling you about the conditions in Honduras today? What are the human rights violations and crimes that are most rampant, and the average citizen has not the political or economic capacity to fight back? The forum is yours.
That's correct. And I think you can draw a straight line to this exodus of people to the 2009 coup. It's very clear that the destabilization provoked by that coup d'etat has led to the situation that we're seeing in Honduras today. And that coup d'etat was followed up by three very questionable, I would argue, fraudulent elections that saw the National Party put into power. The National Party is a right-wing party largely dominated by conservative landowning and business elites in Honduras. And this most recent election in particular, it was basically a naked electoral fraud. So it was one of those situations where the opposition candidate, so a lot of the forces that were organized in resistance to the coup d'etat end up forming a political party known as Libre, and they presented a candidate that, you know, was kind of presented a moderate image. He was able to really capture a lot of support from the Honduran population. The day as the votes were coming in, it was obvious that he was on top. It looked like he was going to win. And then that night, polling counting stopped, and it took them weeks to announce. And of course, to the surprise of no one, they said that the ruling party, the ruling candidate, Juan Orlando Hernández, had won. And so Juan Orlando Hernández has largely been ruling for that political economic elite in Honduras, and also at the interests of the United States and United States capital. And so what we see in Honduras is actually a situation of worsening poverty, where over the last year, 400,000 more people fell beneath the poverty line. And we're talking extreme poverty in some of these cases. And in terms of the human rights situation, well, the fraud kind of tells you just what the political realities there are like. We have political prisoners in Honduras. There's one case in particular which I'd like to highlight, of Edwin Espinal. He's a longtime grassroots organizer, and they've got him arrested on trumped up charges that there's no basis to them. But he's withering away in a military prison as a result. And so if there's no room for political dissent, it's very difficult for people to feel like they can change things. And then at the same time, you also have sort of the organized crime groups that, you know, exact taxes from the people in the community, making it impossible for you to kind of run your business. And then on the other hand, you have the police, which also extort you. So you just, there's pressure from all sides. And that's what's provoking just this frustration, this sense, very real sense, that there is no way out of the situation. And so they must migrate.
Trump is now saying that Middle Easterners have infiltrated the caravan, and our vice president of state of Venezuela is organizing the exodus. I don't believe either. Could you give us your perspective on the current Honduran military regime and how it's not friendly with Maduro's socialist government, and what is the evidence that they actually have?
Certainly, it's a ludicrous statement to suggest, right? I mean, it was a very large crowd. I was mixed in with it, but certainly wasn't any indication that we're people of Middle Eastern descent. But even the accusation itself is racist. This idea that anybody who's Middle Eastern truly is a terrorist who's there to try to sneak away. It's a ludicrous assertion, and I think it's one that's very much based on a political calculation by the Trump administration to try to rally up its base, which a lot of it counts on, has these sort of white supremacist elements within it. And so that's why we're seeing that. Just to answer your previous question and this question, yes, I think the tension or sort of the support that you see from the United States towards these repressive regimes in Central America and Honduras in particular, it's actually not a new phenomenon. They used to say that Honduras was the unsinkable flotilla for the United States. It's where they conducted and their training for the Contras against the Sandinistas in the 70s and 80s. And so you have a very long relationship of the United States using Honduras as kind of like a launching pad for all of its operations in Central America. And so it's a strategic move by the U.S. State Department, by the foreign policy thinkers in Washington, to try to continue to maintain its imperial interests in the region, and so that it's able to kind of use that as a means of interfering and do things like provoke issues, diplomatic problems with other countries in the region, and to pursue its regime change goals in Venezuela, right? And that's why you see this accusation trying to make Venezuela into the boogeyman in this situation. And so that's also what drove the coup in 2009, right? Zelaya was aligning himself with these progressive forces that largely dominated the region back then. So they obviously went for what in some ways was the weakest link, the country that was least able to kind of resist imperialist interference in its country.
Could you express some insights into the union leaders, including a very well-known woman who was martyred, and she came from a peasant background, and they started to kill with assassination teams anyone who was against the coup. And once the coup was successful, and Hillary Clinton immediately recognized them, as did the New York Times. But there was over 27 countries in from Spain and Central and South America and Mexico that did not recognize the new regime, and they got no attention whatsoever. But what was going on behind the scenes, when it was no longer in the headlines, we were told, like with Libya, well, we're putting in, we're helping to encourage people who really represent the people, and we'll stabilize the country. And nothing could be further from the truth, and no one counts how many unionist, how many artists, how many political activists were rounded up, disappeared, tortured, or killed? Could you address that? And that's all on Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama.
Absolutely. I think it's also really worth mentioning that this is a bipartisan effort to destabilize Honduras. This isn't just the Trump administration. This was very much the Obama administration and Hillary Clinton in particular. And the person you cited, Berta Cáceres from COPIN, a wonderful organization dedicated to organizing marginalized people, indigenous people in defense of their territory, in defense of their interests in Honduras. She was absolutely targeted and unfortunately assassinated in 2016 because of her efforts to organize her people to resist against this regime. And that is also, I think, really telling of just what the realities are in Honduras. If you are an opponent of this regime, you have to watch your back. And we've seen a lot of targeted repression. We've also seen a lot of people who've had to flee and seek political asylum elsewhere, with very real threats against them. And also, you know, that the state is actually the one that is engaging in some of these. In the case of Berta Cáceres, the people who are who have been identified as being both the intellectual and the material authors of the crime have ties to the state, have ties to also the business community in Honduras. And so it's a state where this impunity reigns, and it allows these kinds of situations to persist. And I think, again, I want to emphasize that that's what also leads to this sense of desperation. I was having some exchanges with people on social media where there's this meme going around about how all these people who are marching should just instead march on their government. And the thing is, they just don't realize that, of course they have. People have been trying for a very long time to change the reality on the ground. But when you have a regime like that, which is backed by the most powerful country in the world, the United States, it is very difficult to try to get the change that's necessary to improve people's lives.
We have time for just one more response from you. What do you believe is the likely outcome with people coming? Will most of the people come and try to seek legitimate and legal asylum, or will they try to breach the gap somewhere and stay here illegally? And wouldn't it be in their interest if they did it legally and explained the horror? And especially young girls, teenagers are being kidnapped by gangs, and they're threatened if they don't go into the sex trade business, the gang will kill their mother. These horror stories we don't hear in the United States, but boy, they're epidemic down there, and we're not using that to legitimize the reason why these people are coming and to expedite their legal entry into the country. Your thoughts?
That's right. And so I think one thing to also recognize is that seeking asylum, you know, fleeing from political persecution is a right that is guaranteed by international law, and international law that is also binding on the United States because it's signed treaties recognizing its duty to respect that. And in fact, what we've actually seen recently over the last few years is there's actually a huge drop. The levels are actually consistent with levels what we saw in the 70s in terms of actual apprehensions of people crossing irregularly into the United States. And instead, what you see is actually a lot of people who present themselves to border officials and actually say, I am requesting asylum, I am fleeing persecution. And yes, they are detained, but then they're put into a process where their claims are investigated to see if they're, you know, legitimate or authentic or not. And that is actually the plan of most of the people traveling. You know, they are fleeing persecution, they're fleeing violence. They're, you know, like you said, the threats against people are rampant. You know, if you don't pay your quota to the gangs, they'll take over your business or they'll kill your family members. If you don't hand over your daughter to the sex trade, they will kill your family members, they will kill her. Like, these are very real threats. These are real persecution that people are fleeing, and they can't turn to the state because the police won't do anything about it in Honduras. And so that's their plan, is to get to the border. They're not trying to sneak across. You know, they're not trying to cross the desert. They are going to present themselves. The problem is that the U.S. government knows that this is the strategy. They know that this is what most people have been doing as of late. And actually, just recently, there was rumors that the administration is considering kind of a blanket ban, very similar, kind of using the same legal arguments that they used for the Muslim ban very recently, that eventually the Supreme Court held up. So they know that legally they can likely get away with it, which is to say that people who are fleeing from Central American countries are banned from seeking asylum. And I would say, just now my personal opinion, if that situation does present itself, I think we have a humanitarian duty to these people who are fleeing. This is an incredibly hard journey. It's very, very difficult. I accompanied them only for 4 hours in the hot sun, and it was exhausting. It was debilitatingly hot. And this is a very hard journey, and it's barely just begun. If they are denied entry through these legal maneuvers in the United States, I think Mexico has a responsibility to give them humanitarian asylum and work visas so that they'd be able to provide for their families.
My final thought is this. We owe a moral obligation to all the refugees in Central and South America whose lives have been turned upside down because of our foolish regime change or regime meddling. Long history, over 60 different countries around the world. For over 120 years, we've been doing this. And I thought it might make sense if we were to build a quality housing right at the border, on the American side of the border, where there would be day school, there would be a medical clinic, there would be a general cafeteria with healthy food three times a day, there'd be psychological counseling, so that when someone comes, they'd be able to live in a quality environment until their case is heard. Hopefully, somewhere that resonates. I want to thank you very much, Jose, for your good work, and we look forward to another conversation.
Great. Thank you very much for having me.
All the best. Bye. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day. We'll be right back.